This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Gaze podcast. You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon from noon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen live. Or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9 FM.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, nail it, grade it, change the point it to impress it, snap it, work it, quick, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick, rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, call it, find it, view it, code it, gem and lock it, surf it, scroll it, pause it, click it, cross it, crack it.
Good afternoon. This is TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9, where we're covering some of the latest in technology, gadgets, and other things. What's the other one we do? I can't remember now.
Is there something else? have we forgotten about this all year?
It's that time of year where we're just kind of like chilling back. You know, we might be a bit sozzled from the night before. Who knows? I'm not.
I'm sozzled from a week of work. My goodness. Mm. Everyone says, oh, there's only 1 week left in the year. Can you just do this one little thing?
That last week where you're kind of like tossing up between doing that last little bit and, you know, trying to celebrate at the same time. That was the voice of Raina.
Hi.
Hello, Raina. How are you today?
I'm great.
And Michael, hello.
Good morning.
And with us in the studio as well is Craig.
Hello.
Hello, Craig. A special guest in for this week.
Yes, the resident scientist.
The resident scientist, yes.
Our own Dr. Carl.
Dr. Carl. Dr. Craig. Are you a doctor?
In training.
You're working on it.
That's it.
Nice. And there is a reason why you're in, because we will be in the not too distant future talking about the metaphysical world.
Indeed.
Perhaps. The idea of, you know, it's a time when, you know, a lot of magic and, I don't know, there's a lot of stories around about what we should, you know, do at this time of year, including, you know, the Christmas story and all those kinds of things. And why not take that to the scientific world and talk about simulations inside simulations?
Indeed, yes. Are we inside a simulated universe?
So we'll be discussing that later on in the show. What else have we got? We've got a bit of security news to kick off the show with as well. The Auditor General of the ACT have done a bit of an audit of their government practices there. So we thought we'd touch on that.
Some gaming.
Yes.
Talk of gaming.
Yes. It's a good time to review, I guess, where we're at with gaming. You know, it's been a common sort of theme over the course of this year in particular, where, you know, what does... is misogyny a problem in gaming?
Yeah.
And is, you know, the...
Is anything getting better?
Yeah, and is a GLBTI... community also, you know, represented well in gaming. So we'll talk a bit about that. I've got two gamers either side of me right now who I'm just going to sit back and let that conversation go. I think it'll be...
We're surrounding you.
And I think we're both avid diversity advocates as well.
Yes.
What better people to have in the show. And we've got a few other tech news items to cover off as well, so do stay tuned to have a bit of a natter. If you want to contact us while we're in the studio here, you can do so by texting us 0427JOY949. You can tweet us.
You can. On TechnoGaze, which is TechnoGaze. We might even tweet you back.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could email us at onair@joy.org.au.
And you can call us
at 1300JOY949.
And Mushin is on the front desk as we speak. ready to take your call. Thank you, Mushin, for being there all this year. He's been a wonderful office admin person to keep us all on track while we're doing the show. Well, let's start off with some security news now. Security in the ACT government could lead to fraud. That is the headline.
Eek.
And the ACT Auditor General has been doing a bit of an audit over what the ACT government practices are and has found a few things the public service has not been doing to protect information and prevent data tampering.
Yeah, and it's almost like we're back to the year 2000 again with their use of passwords or perhaps lack of passwords and lack of individual logons to the systems.
Oh, no.
Yes, I remember the good old days when, you know, you'd all share a username and sort of tell everyone what your password was and things like that.
Yeah, and that's a big, big faux pas to be doing that.
Oh, right? Many years ago we got wrapped over the knuckles about doing that and had it drummed into our heads about, you know, why you shouldn't do it. But the ACT public service seems to be lagging a little bit.
So they've found some weaknesses in control over computer information and with the continued use of generic or shared user accounts, they don't have any sort of enforcement of, you know, your typical policies. And those policies may include, right, the complexity of passwords.
Mm-hmm.
So hello is not an appropriate password.
What was the most often used password recently with the Adobe hack? Was it Monkey or something like that?
No, it was Password 123 or something.
Something, yeah, it was pretty basic. Strange.
See, I always just use asterisks, 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 asterisks.
How many times?
Four generally.
Right, okay,
sure. the minimum is.
The requirement, yeah.
One of the other things that it did highlight is that Housing ACT, which is the public housing sector of that part of the government, was particularly at risk, which is a little bit scary because there's a lot of people's personal information and people, you know, paying rent and all kinds of other things going on there, which is pretty creepy.
And it's one of these things that until somebody actually hacks in there, either steals stuff or overwrites and gets rid of data, it's just going to continue on. And then one day there's going to be this massive hellstorm, I guess.
Yeah, what's happened over and over again, hasn't it? From one organisation to another, a really good example of that is the Adobe hack that occurred, and you know, hundreds of millions of accounts have been compromised, mine included. And what do? You can't do anything about it, right? Like, no. Well, you can just retrospectively try to protect yourself.
Change all those passwords you were using the same thing on Adobe or whatever.
As much as I hate Sarbanes-Oxley, perhaps an equivalent law in Australia would be good and force everyone to at least meet a certain standard.
Also in security-related news now, I think it was, on ABC's 7:30 last night?
Yep.
Crypto Locker.
They talked about Crypto Locker, which is a concept, isn't it, of locking up your PC.
Yeah, so Crypto Locker is specifically one that does this, but there are quite a few other little things. In fact, even amongst ourselves, I was chatting to one of the other volunteers at Joy just a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying that he'd got it as well. You know, a thing that locked up his computer and said, we're going to... you know, we're going to lock up your computer until you pay up some cash. And, of course, he got out of it. But this Crypto Locker thing is even worse because what it actually does is literally encrypts a whole bunch of your files and holds them to ransom until you cough up the coin.
So it's also known as ransomware, isn't it?
That's right.
The idea. And so the idea is once it's been done, they demand payment to unlock the files and return access to them. And they're using Bitcoin as well as a method of payment.
Because it's untraceable.
But it's not. Well, it's not really untraceable. It's hard to trace. But it's also, for you know, for a lot of purposes, as good as cash in terms of doing the dodge.
Yes, yeah.
And they also put a bit of pressure on you as well, don't they? They give you a small time frame to pay up.
They do. So it's a couple of days. And sometimes it will also be, you know, a threat to say, well... you know, we've locked it and we're from the, you know, the FBI or the AFP or whatever, and we've locked it because of all these disgusting things we found on your computer, which, of course, you almost certainly weren't looking at. but you're going to worry about it anyway. Well, geez, you know, I'd better pay it because, you know, what if I get branded a, you know, a, some kind of pervert or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of awful things that go on with it.
Yeah. And it's very specific, isn't it? It happens to individuals and, you know, it happens to people here at Joy. It's I'm actually quite amazed. I've not actually spoken to someone myself who has had it happen.
I received an email from a friend a few weeks ago saying, oh, at work our computers got infected with Crypto Locker and I need to pay the ransom with Bitcoin. Does anybody know how to get some Bitcoin?
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow.
So I said, well, assuming that you can't sort of restore everything from a backup, here's a website that tells you how to get some Bitcoin.
Mm.
We heard recently that the Queensland University of Technology, as well as a few others, so a Sydney-based city council and that, but QUT decided, well, no, actually, we're not going to cough up this ransom and spent quite a long time restoring all their data from backups, which is a bit scary, so... Quite a lot of work. I wonder if they felt like it was worth it.
Well, it's good that their backups were there and they worked. But yeah, it took them days and days to do it and there would have been a massive disruption.
Mm, huge.
Now, also just, I'll mention this briefly as well. I saw an article by Ben Grubb, who is, I think, the chief technology writer for Fairfax. Just last night, he had an article posted about the idea of covering your webcams. All the little cameras that you have on your various devices, whether they be your phone or your laptops.
Mm-hmm. Desktop computers even.
Mm.
And talking about the idea that your camera typically has a little light next to it to indicate when it's turned on or not, which people often rely on to determine whether or not it's you know, turned on.
Yep.
Mm.
But there's hacking... software available, or there's the ability at least to stop that light from
so you can operate the camera and not have the light on, because after all it's only software that's controlling it.
Now I don't know if this is true or not, but when I was doing a bit of researching on this story, I was reading that apparently on certain ones you actually can't do that because the light is connected to the power, and if you can power the camera you must light the light, which those are mostly newer Apple ones, but a lot of other ones you don't really hear about.
Because according to the article, it was talking about Apple devices in particular that were maybe from 2009.
Yeah.
So perhaps things have improved on a hardware level since then. But, you know, are there specs from Apple to say that this is the case?
I mean, well, apparently that's how it's supposed to be there. But it's, you know, it's possible that maybe there's a workaround that we don't already know about.
Of course, his response was quite simple. All you have to do is put some sticky tape over the top of it.
Band-aid. But that makes it look less pretty.
It does.
I've got a little collector card on mine at my workplace. I'd stuck on there with a bit of blue tack, so I've got something pretty to look at.
I was covering mine up at one stage, and then I got to the point where I thought, you know what, if somebody wants to see me naked, it's their bad luck. On that note,
this is Techno Gaze on Joy 94.9, where we're covering some of the latest in technology, gadgets and consumer electronics. And we'll be back with more talk, including we're going to go into the metaphysical world in just a few moments.
Techno Gaze.
Joy 94.9.
In the beginning, the universe was created. This has made a lot of people very angry and been widely regarded as a bad move.
That's
a
right.
Classic.
This is Techno Gaze on Joy 94.9. We thought we'd use that to set the scene. Of course, that's a quote from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
It is, but it's from the second book, I believe.
I think it's from the second book, from memory, but it's been a while since I've read them.
And so we're talking about universes. And the concept, I guess, of... There's been some recent research in this regard of universes and simulations inside universes of other universes.
Yes, and it's... Like, the research that's been done has been, you know, varied. Even doing our own simulations of our current universe, I think, is what's starting to spark this, where we've got the really minuscule parts of physics, which is, you know, QCD, which you don't really need to know about, but what happens inside an atom kind of thing.
Right.
And we're going to start simulating them on really, really small scales. But essentially, once we simulate them, then all we need to do is make larger simulations until we create a universe.
So this, if I take a step back for a moment, the question should be asked, is it even possible to simulate the universe as we know it? That's the question that came to mind. And it's interesting, I kind of thought about this and it was like, I tacked on the words, as we know it.
Yep.
Which is an important point because we only know so much of the universe that we live in, right? I mean, there's new discoveries all the time and theories being put together of what, what rules are in place.
So we know a fair amount of... well, I guess we don't really know if we know a fair amount, but at the moment...
Do we know what we don't know?
Well, there's a few categories. There's the known unknowns and the unknown unknowns.
Sounds like a software development project right there.
Sounds like a political project right there.
So the good thing about physics, so historically, when... Before we've made a huge discovery like, you know, relativity and electromagnetism and things like that, there have been problems that didn't make sense in physics. And at the moment, we don't have huge amounts of problems that just conflict and don't make sense. So, you know, one could argue that we know a fair amount of what we should know. And a lot of what we're doing now is refinement of these laws and stuff like that. Hmm. And... So could we simulate the universe as we know it? We can, and that research about QCD and inside atoms and stuff like that is the first step to starting to do that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can invoke something like Moore's Law, which says, you know, once you've got a certain amount of technology, you squish them together and you double it, and then you squish two of them together and then you've quadrupled it. So eventually we might be able to get to a point where we can do a simulation that's, you know, simulating a space of a few millimetres, right, which is essentially a human cell. So, you know, there are things like that.
I think about this and I think, well, isn't the fact that we are using to achieve a simulation, you effectively have to do this on a device like a computer.
Yep. Generally a supercomputer.
And in that, I mean, we are using something that's in our own physical world. We are using a computer.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, it is bound by certain rules and certain... it's bound by the physics that it works in. So is it even possible to simulate everything on a holistic scale? Like, we'll have to reach some limits at some point in time, right?
Yeah, so one of the interesting things when I was kind of researching this was I had all these things in my head that I deal with on a daily basis as a scientist. I kind of do simulations. And then I kind of realized not everybody really kind of understands what a simulation means or what it means to do a simulation. And the biggest thing that you come down to is you need to have discrete steps. So you calculate everything that's going to happen at a certain point in time, and then you move everything forward a step.
Right.
And then you calculate everything that was going to happen at that step in time, and then you continue this process on and on and on.
Hmm.
So one of the things that we need to try and understand is the time resolution. So essentially, yes, what time step are we going to use for a universe? And one of the interesting research that's been done currently or just about to be done is, can we actually calculate essentially a time step for our universe to see if we're in a simulation? And this comes from there's a correlation between the energy of particles and time. So really high energy particles can only or are mapped to a very small time step essentially. And we have this thing in astrophysics which is called the GZK limit of cosmic rays,
right?
And because there's a cutoff, you can say that there is a time resolution for our universe. Kind of. It's not entirely exactly like that, but that is one of the things you can infer.
Right. It's, yeah, because you have to put some bounds around this concept of time, I guess, right? You have to actually have rules implemented to work out what time actually is in order to simulate it. So, therefore, you know, to put those rules around it, do we understand them to their full extent?
But it's not just time as well. There are, it's things like... So pi is a number that has an infinite number of decimal places. Mm-hmm. So for a simulation to calculate pi, it takes a certain amount of time, mm-hmm. Depending on how many decimal places you go to. But right. if you were to say simulate it exactly, you would have to spend an amount of time calculating or infinite
perhaps an digits. Infinite amount of time as a result.
Yeah, which then comes to, you know, the next point is, are simulations being done in real time?
Yes.
And if they are not being done, or if they are being done in real time, what limits are they putting on certain numbers and things like that?
It leads me to believe that if we are living in a simulation ourselves, and, you know, perhaps this whole idea of having a massive supercomputer to create a simulation of our own, mm-hmm. You know, it would have its own rules and own boundaries and so forth that are implemented because of the physicality of that, right? Like the computer system only has a certain amount of space to store data and yes. to compute stuff on a given basis. Therefore, the reality that occurs inside that simulation is in itself a different reality to our own.
Yeah.
And perhaps this is what brings about the concept that we're trying to sort of get our heads around, right? So maybe if we are in our own simulation here in this universe, is that because some other higher being or beings perhaps has created a simulation of our own?
Yeah, well, that's so the idea, which has been around for quite a long time, is that once you can create one simulation of a universe, then that simulation essentially can create its own simulation.
Right.
And are we in a real universe or are we in a simulated universe? And what is kind of the likelihood of that? So,
but isn't reality just what we see it as? I mean, so taking a step further, so if I create a supercomputer that has a simulation programmed into it and so forth, that just happens to create some sort of consciousness in itself.
Yeah.
And the consciousness is able to determine things about its own reality, but it can't break out of the reality that it's in. Therefore, yeah. you know, it's a similar concept here where, you know, sure, it's a nice idea, I guess, to say, oh, we're in a simulation, but how would we even be able to know what that, you know, what is that higher simulation?
Isn't that by definition you wouldn't know if you were in a simulation?
Well, would you care? That's the thing. If we could determine that we were in a simulation, do you think? I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of people who would care.
Hmm. Well,
but
you may
what
not,
difference does it make to your life?
You may not care if you find out it's a, you know, a 12-year-old's birthday present that you're in their simulation.
But you might. I mean, if you're a bit of a believer or whatever in you know, a god or a higher being or whatever, and it turns out that higher being is that 12-year-old with a Christmas present, then what is that going to do to your life?
You'd probably call a strike.
Is this, in fact, science and religion coming together yet again to come to the same conclusion? And I know some scientific people might roll their eyes at this whole concept, but
I don't think they would. If there was actually evidence to say that we are in a simulation, I don't think scientists would particularly be, you know, adverse to believing that there was obviously someone running the simulation if there was evidence for it.
Mm. I can see the religious community perhaps protesting a little bit.
It's just those hot button topics that they like to get a bit worried about. This is TechnoGaze. It is a time to talk a little bit metaphysical. You know, we have Santa Claus that comes and drops us presents, and we have stories of you know, certain religious beliefs that come up at this time of year. So why not, you know, take it to the scientific level as well? Hopefully we've...
Well, obviously the only person who could deliver all of those presents is Doctor Who in his TARDIS.
You don't know that Santa Claus isn't a Time Lord.
Exactly.
He should be, at the very least.
Especially because I distinctly remember meeting Santa Claus a lot of times and he had a different face every time.
So how do we send a signal up to our simulator and say, hey, can we make Doctor Who the new Santa?
I'm sure they already know, actually, and they're packing themselves right now because we're about to discover them. Right here on TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9. We're going to return back to real reality in just a few moments. With some more tech news, this is TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9.
TechnoGaze. Joy 94.9.
It is 29 minutes to one here on Joy 94.9. It's Techno Gaze with the lovely Craig Mark Michael and the decidedly average myself, Raina.
Don't be so hard on yourself.
I wouldn't. I think it's a bit of overkill to call me lovely today. I think I'm a bit.
You're always lovely, Mark.
Oh.
It is a lovely.
Excuse me.
Oh. It is a lovely time of year, and I think we're all a bit special.
Yes.
And we're back into the tech news after a pretty heavy segment there.
It's only so much justice you can do to the metaphysical world in the space of 10 minutes.
I confess I found it challenging to think of what to say until we started talking about who cares. I do care. But tech news.
Yep.
So we heard this week that Twitter was interested in adding a feature that allows you to edit a tweet after you have tweeted it and...
Tweeted?
I don't know.
Tweeted.
Tweeted?
Yes.
So the idea has come up to be able to edit your tweets after the fact.
That's right. And that has also been widely regarded as a bad move.
A little part of my brain is going, bing, 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 no, this is wrong. Oh. I love Twitter too much.
Well, it kind of goes against the grain because Twitter's this stream that just gets spewed out and you can't stop it or control it.
That's right.
And now if you want to go back and say, oops, sorry, I made a mistake, it becomes like what, Facebook?
And the way that this feature would apparently work is that if you retweet something that someone edits, then your retweet changes to suit. So if I write something that says, you know, Christmas is my favourite time of year, guys, what do you reckon? And I get a bunch of retweets and I change it to say something horrible.
Hmm.
I'm making them look bad as well. You know, you can do some pretty nefarious things.
Yeah, what happens to the cascading tweets? Especially like you said, you know, oh yeah, I think that's a good idea, and you just put something completely opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all the modified tweets that are quoted instead of actually like retweeted.
Well, a quoted tweet is not necessarily attached to the original tweet by anything other than a reply, but even so, it's a bit creepy.
Yeah, well, and you can quote a tweet, but it's taken on faith that you actually have quoted it correctly in the first place, right? And if people start editing tweets after the fact, you know, are you, causing, what's the word?
Misquoting them.
Misquoting them and casting aspersions on the person who's quoted you by, you know, you could then go about saying, oh, you misquoted me when you said that.
Mm.
Which I can imagine in certain high-profile tweets would be a point of concern.
Yeah, and I mean, for example, every day on Tumblr, there's yet another screenshot of some outraged person going, look what Lady Gaga tweeted or whatever. Mm. And it's obviously a screenshot that someone's manipulated to say, you know, I hate puppies and kittens or something equally, you know,
really,
contentious.
She does?
Well, that's the thing. And it gets, you know, a million retweets. Look what she said. Well, you know, she clearly, it's bad
just
enough.
Just a screenshot.
Now, the interesting thing about this report, though, that I thought was kind of cool, and I've just reread it this morning, but apparently the person who leaked this, you know, fascinating information from Twitter is in fact a former, not current, Reuters editor who he left or might have been asked to leave after he was charged with helping Anonymous do some hacks and a few other things. So,
oh, really?
So there's been a few people jumping up and down after this report came out going, not sure about this.
Although Twitter's been under fire a lot lately because they just changed their privacy policies for blocking, didn't they?
They sure did. We talked about that last week and it was, you know, was it last week? There was quite a lot of contention about it.
Yeah.
But also, of course, they've just had a giant IPO, so it's in a lot of people's interest to say naughty things about Twitter, I'm sure.
Monetization. Their features that, you know, that could possibly be used to monetize things.
There you go, pay to edit.
Yeah.
50 cents to take away your embarrassing typo.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Facebook have, of course, done this, right? You can post a status update on Facebook or even a comment and then change it after the fact as well.
Yeah, it's been around for a while.
Fantastic for fixing my grammatical mistakes when I'm tired.
Spelling mistakes or the odd, you know, the odd incorrect use of there, or there, which is often picked up on Facebook. But, it, you know, that's not all it's used for, right? And I think it's a different forum. Twitter is a different forum where you've got the ability to retweet, which isn't really... I mean, you can do something via someone else on Facebook, but that's not quite the same thing as retweeting as such. So you're not, you know, tweeting word for word the person, or you're not status updating word for word the person's original post.
Mm.
So it's a very different thing for Twitter to actually provide that functionality.
Because my feeling of Twitter has always been that it's a lot more public. Like, I mean, they have the Twitterverse and you release things into the Twitterverse and things like that. And it is meant to be, you are meant to think about what you are saying before you say it, because anyone or most people can see it. And it's not just my friends on Facebook can see it. It's you know, meant to be a public forum kind of thing.
Yeah, there's always, in my mind anyway, when I decide to make something public, I choose, first of all, whether to use Twitter or Facebook to do it.
Or which Twitter again?
Well, I only have one. I've drawn the line at one. I only need one. But some people do have multiple accounts and for different purposes. But again, like, you can publish in your Twitter account bio what this account is all about. You know, and I've got a very personal sort of, this is what this is, because it's me. But some people might have one for one purpose and another for another purpose and be still quite public about the fact that to exist. But, you know, just it's you're following this because you like this part about me and therefore, you know, adhere to that. Yeah. We're talking tech here on Technogaze on Joy 94.9. It's 23 minutes to one right now. And
More news. The NSA again.
Oh, again.
Yes. But it's got a little bit of a twist.
Oh?
There's a judge out there that says to the NSA, maybe you shouldn't be allowed to collect all this data and keep it.
Wow. Common sense.
Yeah. He was then waterboarded and we've never heard from him since.
No, he has not been, but no. He could possibly. So, you know, it's been hailed as a landmark ruling. US federal judge. They've ruled that the NSA surveillance program likely breaches the Constitution and has granted the request for two Verizon customers. The NSA actually destroy metadata it had collected on them.
Fantastic. It turns out, though, so the judge's name is Richard Leon, and it turns out that Judge Leon's order will be suspended because, of course, the government is going to appeal it to a higher court. So we should see this pan out probably over the course of quite a few months.
They obviously see the stakes are high in this. If they're picking out this two individuals, you know, court case and saying we're going to really, you know, defend it to the hilt, they obviously see that this is a big threat to what they're trying to achieve.
Mm. Yeah, and if one judge starts talking this way, then there might be others. So they're
that's right.
Appealing.
How dare those judges, you know, uphold the Constitution of the US?
Well, that's part of the joy of having a system just like that. Mm. Now he stepped away specifically from talking about internet data as well. So this is really only about telephone data.
Mm-hmm.
But it's possible that if something solid came out of this, then maybe we would start seeing a bit more sort of commentary about internet.
Open the floodgates,
here
is what I
comes.
Say.
Here
and
it all comes.
This is the thing, right? So it's actually the I mean, there's been a lot of comment about the NSA and their program, including a lot of comment on this particular show. And, you know, what actually needs to occur is the system that is used to implement this ability for the NSA to do stuff should also be used in the proper way to rile against it. And the higher power in this case is the judicial system of the United States. So all power to them.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this develops.
Now, we'll take a slight deviation now to back to Microsoft, I think. Microsoft have... of course, Steve Ballmer. He's the guy who is very famous for ranting and running around a stage.
Colourful identity, I think, is the phrase I like to use.
Have you seen the video clip of him from about 20, 25 years ago when he was selling PCs?
It was amazing.
It's just so hyper.
It was like a Sunday infomercial. Yes. It was phenomenal.
Yeah, and he's developers video,
right.
Of course. Where
I love
sweaty.
This company.
Oh, God. And was it him who wanted to throw a chair, or was that Google?
I don't doubt that he would have.
There's lots of memes around, anyway, of Steve Ballmer. And, of course, he's announced his retirement from Microsoft a couple of months back. And there's all this speculation about who might replace him as CEO of Microsoft.
There'd be a few rounds of interviews probably with that sort of thing, you'd think. It's not going to happen in a hurry.
They're not going to pick one out of a hat?
Well, they've picked one out of a something. Although they've They floated a potential replacement, which is the CEO of Ford, so Alan Mulally.
Yeah, well, this flotation came from the Alan Mulally's autobiographer.
Oh.
So it's probably a Mulally fanboy.
So it was pulled from something.
Yes. And he said, oh, I've got seven good reasons why Alan Mulally should be the new CEO of Microsoft.
Hmm.
Now, Alan Mulally is probably going to retire in the next 12 to 18 months from Ford
right.
as CEO, so he's going to be looking for a job in his retirement.
Timing.
Yeah, so timing is really good.
Mm-hmm.
According to, this author, Mulally understands big business and doesn't get intimidated by it. And, you know, he's worked at Ford, and before that he was at Boeing.
Wow.
Right. So he's worked for very, very large organisations.
Doesn't get much bigger than those.
No, that's exactly it. He's got a track record of engineering major change. And one of the things that Mulally's known for within Ford is getting the different executives from the different groups to work together.
And this is, I think, one of the key things that Microsoft needs to do. There's always, like, you hear of different product teams and different sort of areas of Microsoft all fighting with each other. And that may be some of the reason why we have not necessarily a very good experience when we use Microsoft products. So perhaps if we can get them to be nice to one another. Mm. And Microsoft won. There was a strategy that was released back a couple of months ago by Ballmer to try and address this as well, to try and make the teams sort of work in more harmonious ways. But whether it's gone far enough or whether it has to follow through from an organisational perspective, is it needs someone to actually drive it and perhaps tweak it where it needs to be tweaked as well.
Well, one of these other reasons that is on this list from this autobiographer says that he's also really good at making sure that people are on the same page as regards data and evidence. So he's going to be pretty strict on that sort of thing, which
another
I guess
reason
sounds good.
He also called out, well, the autobiographer called out his engineering background.
Yeah, it's interesting to think of somebody being in charge that maybe has a technical background but isn't from the industry. You know, he's not sort of disappearing up his own.
Well, do you think that's going to be a problem? Because I think it might be a bit of a problem to have a mechanical engineer trying to take over.
I don't think
trying
so.
Trying to herd software devs together.
Yeah, because there are different nuances between the two fields, and feel like a huge.
There are, and I think, there are probably worse choices for CEO.
Correct.
As well as better choices. But when you think about it, Microsoft is a pretty damn unique company in this world, in terms of scale and size and similarities in industry, you'd think of perhaps Apple, maybe Sony, not many others that you could, what's the pool that's being drawn from?
Look, not that I'm the CEO of an enormous company or anything myself, but I personally, when I think of my colleagues, I value what they bring from other places more than I value their technical skill. Certainly for a CEO as well, it's not his job to make all of the technical decisions all of the time if this guy gets in, right? It will be the job of, him picking the right people and having the right sensibility. And that's not something that you can always learn from the software industry.
But at least with an engineering background, you would think he understands the disciplines that have to go into the build process.
That's the big thing.
And he appreciates that. And, one of the other things that this guy said was that he knows when he doesn't understand something, and he goes and he actively seeks out help.
Right.
Which is a very good skill to have.
Yeah. A very good skill for any CEO to have, you'd hope, to be able to delegate and so forth.
So it'll be interesting. Will Alan Mulally be the new CEO of Microsoft?
Are we taking bets yet on...
No, not on this. We're taking bets on something later on.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
BlackBerry.
Interesting. Are we sending in our CVs?
What to Microsoft?
Well, they haven't picked someone yet.
No, that's right. Why not?
I could do it for that money.
Hey, I'd do it for no money.
I'd do it for half that money.
It would look so good on a business card.
This is Techno Gaze here on Joy 94.9, where we're shooting the breeze on whether we'd be good enough to be CEO or not of a multinational, massive software company. We'll be back with more talk about... We'll bring it back to earth a bit in a few moments. Talk about gaming and whether the LGBT community is better or worse off after a year of gaming here on TechnoGaze.
Joy 94.9.
This is TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9, where we're covering some of the latest in technology, gadgets, consumer electronics.
And gaming.
And gaming.
Yay.
That was in stereo. Because I'm surrounded by gamers here. It's like,
Mark, I think you and I should get a coffee or something with these two. Go on about it.
Don't say that like it's a bad thing, Mark.
No, I don't. So we've done a few... we've covered gaming in general over the course of the year.
My very first appearance on this show was about gaming and gayness and gender and thingies.
And it's
a bit full on.
It's a common issue, isn't it? Of you know how what the GLBTI community experience when they get online and start gaming, because a lot of gaming these days is done with other people.
With
social networks or online with massive multiplayer environments and that sort of thing. And of course, you think of the typical chat that might occur online with inside a game, and you might hear a lot of things that you don't necessarily want to hear as a person of of a minority.
Someone who's not a white male young dude is pretty much anyone who's not one of those things.
Yes,
and straight is usually in someone's firing line sooner or later. But it's I don't know. I feel like it gets better. Craig, you've got some. You play World of Warcraft, don't you?
Yeah, so I played World of Warcraft not long after it first came out, and then I took a bit of a sabbatical and then came back to it, and I did notice that actually the kind of the social responsibility that people had taken upon these kind of, you know, derogatory slurs and things like that grew over the years. So there used to be, you know, this joke about the Barons being a pretty bad place to have chat, to be in the chat rooms for.
Right.
And it was kind of like a lot of the, you know, as you said, young white male straight dudes, and they would just talk absolute bollocks all the time. But now a lot of the other players are going, actually, that's not acceptable. And because World of Warcraft is a game where you do to quite a large extent need to have the help of other people.
Yes.
You don't need to, but generally people will put themselves in a position where they need to work cooperatively.
That's right. And if you want a bit of social harmony, you need to,
Yeah, you need to have social responsibility. And I find that, and Guild Wars 2, I played that for a little while as well, and that I don't think I ever heard anyone say any kind of bad thing like that at all.
I cannot believe, going to Guild Wars 2, how much nicer that community is.
They were so polite and friendly. It was absolutely amazing.
Brings the question from an outsider's point of view. What do you think creates an environment where it's less acceptable to be, you know, misogynistic or to be hateful towards certain minorities? Is it, you've described World of Warcraft or those kind of games. Perhaps would you steer clear of other types of games because they are more known to be those hateful things?
Craig makes a good point about the social aspect of playing those sorts of games, and how if you do want someone to cooperate with you, then you need to not be quite so much of a hose beast. I think sometimes the storytelling aspect of things can be a huge influence on that as well. I mean, again, thinking about Guild Wars 2, how the story is quite, you know, epic battles, war, land, you know, people getting persecuted, other people not getting persecuted, etc. But it's done in quite a way that you are quite aware of a lot of those social dynamics sort of things, as opposed to, say, a story like... what's another good example?
Grand Theft
Auto?
Go to the other side of the spectrum and say, look at Grand Theft Auto. And
so much of that is parody, though. That's subtle, but it's there.
Yeah, I remember seeing someone tweeting, you know, the latest version of Grand Theft Auto, saying, as soon as I had to, as part of the task, rape a woman or something along those lines, as part of progressing through the game, that's when I turned this game off. That's when I stopped using it, because it's just not something that I can do. You know, whether it's parody or not, I mean, you know, is it the environment of the game that actually creates, you know, the sort of the mindset that people find themselves in?
The underlying story as well, though, is a big part of that. I mean, when you play Grand Theft Auto, you are doing quite a lot of horrible things. You don't necessarily have to be raping prostitutes or whatever.
Yeah.
but it's a it's you know, the story is very much you're a criminal. That's you know, a part of that.
But isn't it also to do with the fact that some games are more collaborative and some more competitive?
Yes, sometimes,
and,
yeah.
And therefore that nature really spurs you on to how you behave and how you act and what you do inside the game.
What part of my brain is activated to achieve this goal is perhaps part of it, absolutely.
Or what kind of people are attracted to those kind of games, I think, as well.
Yeah, personality-wise.
Yeah, which I think is probably more to the point, that certain types of people are attracted to certain styles of games.
I guess, you know, taking the year in review, though, I mean, gaming in general has gotten better. I mean, you know, it's at least a conversation is being had about certain areas of you know, certain minority groups, including trans people, including women, and GLBT issues as well. You know, we had Luke Miller on during the year as well. The mere fact of him proposing a gay game up on a engine like Steam and having you know, the conversation occur on that platform.
Yeah, because you notice this. You know, you see sort of other games that have this sort of thing. You know, that sort of underlying theme, or you might have somebody come to, you know, I'm going to do an expansion for this game that includes these sorts of characters or this sort of storyline or whatever. You go to some place like Kickstarter where people are going with a positive thing to say, I want to go and support a thing. You have something like Luke taking his game to the Steam Greenlight forum, where the job is to ostensibly say, yes, I support it.
Yes.
But really the attitude on like a lot of Steam players and a lot of the attitudes on the Steam community is not, hey, I want to support a thing that I appreciate. It's, I want to knock a few things down.
Yeah. The tall poppy kind of idea, or, I don't agree with this, therefore I'm going to rip it to shreds with words.
Yeah, that's right.
Or attempt to, anyway.
That's right. I mean, Kickstarter has its own problems. So Anita Sarkeesian, for example, is a critic who did a series, and it's been going on for quite a while, about feminism and tropes in video games and stuff like that, and got an absolute caning from the unwashed masses about what an awful person she is for doing these things. Like,
I do think, in as a whole, though, there's a lot more mainstream, and I call mainstream, use curly quotes for that, right, my air quotes on it, mainstream media is picking up on it more. You know, the likes of The Verge or the big websites that are covering tech are really, you know, sort of drawing attention to it as well, which at least there's a conversation going on, which is not necessarily what's been happening in previous years.
So. And you've got to start somewhere, and a conversation is the perfect way to start.
Mm. Yeah, I think arguably that conversation's already happened in the indie world. It's where you start looking at these AAA games.
Mm. Yeah. The big ones, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, World of Warcraft probably is not a AAA game in the sense of, you know, a Halo or a Call of Duty, but it is very, very widely noticed, and so discussions about how the community works is pretty good. I haven't actually played The Last of Us, which came out this year, and I don't know if you have either.
No, I haven't.
Turns out, though, that there's actually a gay character in that, and it's not a gay game or anything like that, but it's just a part of his story. It's just blah, 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 and I've got a partner.
Skyrim came out this year or last year?
Year before.
Year before, something like that. But they are talking about having gay marriage as part of their... as part of their game, so and it's an option. Like, I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, I won't buy the game because it's got it in it. Well, you know, if you don't want to have a gay marriage, then don't have a gay marriage. Is kind of what people are saying about it.
I've heard that before somewhere. I'm not quite sure where.
It doesn't come for free in a box of cereal. Like, you can opt in.
Mm.
And Mass Effect is you know, the one that everyone talks about all the time. It's like, oh, Shepard gay, Shepard's gay. It's, you know, and we did talk about that as well. You know,
we did.
There's a little bit of cheese in the romance plotline there, but certainly lots of diversity there, and the surrounding characters too.
It's a long way to go, but at least it's progressing for the better. I would suggest you know, bringing to light the negatives actually, you know, allows us to address them and work with them. This is Technogaze here on Joy 94.9. We're almost out of time. It's 4 minutes to one. Time does fly, doesn't it?
When people talk.
How dare we? But we'll be back with a wrap-up of the show in a few moments.
Technogiz.
Joy 94.9.
That's right. This is Joy 94.9. Can't quite do it in the same voice as that very... Wow.
It's a beautiful voiceover, isn't it?
It is. We're almost out of time. It's come to the end of the show for another week. We have one more week of Technogaze here
for the year.
For the year. And then it's then it's 2014. Quick shout out to Donnie, who has messaged in from his paddock. He's doing some fencing.
All the way in Dalesford.
Dalesford. Wow.
I can't help thinking that maybe you guys have too much time in your hands. Lol, love it.
I suspect we do have a little bit more time on our hands, considering it is that, that time of year where it's time to just chillax and, yes, and shoot the breeze, which is what we like to do here on Techno Gaze. If you have missed any part of the show, or perhaps you're looking to peruse previous episodes, you can do so by browsing to joy.org.au/technogaze. Coming up next is a Joy News Bulletin with Matt Thompson, Spirit Fingers Matt Thompson. Followed by Cravings with Pete Dillon. Thank you, of course, Michael, for being here on the show again this week.
Thank you.
And Raina, thank you as well.
Oh, thank you.
And Craig, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Have a great weekend. We'll catch you next week.
Techno Gaze on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.